com. This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, new problems in Syria, and it involves our allies. Retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, the Executive Vice President of FRC, is here in just a moment to explain. And did Hillary Clinton engage in a pay-to-play scheme to fill the coffers of the Clinton Foundation? Well, newly released emails suggest that was the case. In light of the new evidence uncovered in emails obtained by Judicial Watch, members of Congress are calling for a special prosecutor to be appointed. One of those members is the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, Congressman Jim Jordan. He'll join us later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll get an update from another pastor heavily engaged in the relief effort here in Louisiana. My good friend and fellow Marine veteran, Pastor Mark Sturmer of the Church International, will be here to give us the latest on the flood relief efforts taking place in Louisiana. All right, the website, as always, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's program. Also, information about the Values Voter Summit coming up in just a few days. In fact, September 8th, 9th, and 10th, or actually 9th, 10th, and 11th, will be taking place in Washington, D.C. Great lineup of speakers are going to be there. It's you can check it all out at the website, TonyPerkins.com. On Saturday night, the 10th, we'll be honoring Bill Bennett with FRC's Leadership Award. That's going to be a great event. A lot of really interesting people are going to be there for that event. So anyway, it's filling up quickly, but there's still room for you. So go over to TonyPerkins.com and register now for the Values Voter Summit coming up September 8th, 9th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. Why do I always, I guess I want to start it early. I just can't wait. All right. And if you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. Okay, it's been eclipsed by other world problems. I mean, there's so much going on in the world. But the conflict in Syria continues, and it has become even more problematic for the U.S. as we now have two allies fighting each other. U.S.-backed Kurdish forces have been a reliable and effective surrogate for the U.S. in the fight against ISIS. But our NATO ally, Turkey, who is also fighting ISIS, are fighting the Kurds. Now, Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook called the fighting, which has taken place south of the Euphrates River in Syria, unacceptable and a source of deep concern. Not that that means a whole lot. But how significant of a problem is this, and what is going to have to be done to stop it? Well, joining me now with, hopefully, an answer is FRC's Executive Vice President, founding member of the Army's Delta Force, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be with you.
All right. Help our listeners understand. I think I gave a little bit of a background, but fill in the gaps that I left out in that description.
Yeah, there's a town in northern Syria called Manbij, or Manbij. It's one of those Syrian names, Manbij, and it has been a major logistics center for ISIS. Kurds, the primarily Syrian Kurds that are supported by the United States, did an attack on that and killed a lot of ISIS, ran them out of the town. And the agreement and understanding was that they would then turn back to the east, back towards the Euphrates River. Instead, they turned more to the west. That riled the Turks. The Turks have always been concerned about the Kurds, because the Kurds' single objective is to have a homeland, which would include parts of Syria, Iraq, southern Turkey, and Iran. So they see the Kurds as an enemy, just like they do the ISIS. So what the Turks did is they crossed the border with tanks and aircraft and artillery, and they not only took a number of villages up on the northern part of Turkey there to stop the Kurds from making any further incursion towards their border, but they also started fighting these Kurds. Remember, these Kurds are people that we are supporting. We've armed them and equipped them. So when you said we have allies fighting each other, that's exactly what has occurred. And Turkey has demanded that they go back across the east to the east side of the Euphrates River. The U.S. is supporting that decision, and the Kurds are saying that they will do so to prevent the Turks from bombing any more villages or killing any more innocent civilians. It's like everything else in that part of the world. Nobody's really sure what's happening on the ground or what the intentions of either side really is.
Is this another example of the lack of America's role as an international leader in bringing, you know, these kind of, in this case, warring parties or these different factions at the table together, where that we kind of keep them in line? And because of that vacuum in the absence of American leadership, everybody's just kind of doing what they want to do?
Yeah, well, you see, you make a good point, Tony. There's American support for both the Kurds and the Turks, for that matter. But there's no American leadership. We have some special operations people on the ground there that are working with the Kurds. But there is no American leadership in this crisis. And I think that the void that's created by the lack of American leadership is resulting in exactly what you should expect. We've got allies fighting each other.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. General Jerry Boykin, my guest, talking about what is happening in Syria. Haven't talked a lot about that lately. You know, and of course, if you don't talk about anything, it's not happening, but that place is still very volatile. Now, in the wake of what happened where there was the attempted coup in Turkey, has that affected this, where we see a strengthening there of, or an attempt to strengthen control from a pro-Islamic perspective, even though I know they're fighting ISIS, but they're also on the verge of being an Islamic nation?
Well, that's right. And remember that, first of all, a failed coup is probably the worst thing that could have happened, because it gave Erdogan, who is an Islamist, an opportunity to consolidate his power. They're fighting ISIS because they want, they being Turkey, the previous Ottoman Empire, they want to be the head of the Islamic Caliphate ultimately. And that's Erdogan's objective. In fact, when Mohamed Morsi was the president of Egypt and Erdogan went to visit, the Muslim Brotherhood welcomed him as the new leader of the caliphate. So that's his objective. He's fighting ISIS because they are a threat to his future dominance of the global caliphate.
So I would say then probably our most reliable ally in this fight against ISIS and the spread of this radical Islamic view would be the Kurds.
Well, the Kurds are our most reliable ally, and the Kurds are because it's an existential threat to them as well. I mean, they've targeted Kurds. ISIS has targeted Kurds. They've gone into Kurdish areas in both Iraq and Syria, and they have brutalized the Kurds. So this is about survival for the Kurds, but they also have a long-term objective of establishing an independent Kurdistan, and that's what the Turks, as well as the Iranians, for example, are very much afraid of that. But they are our friends in that area, and they've joined us in this fight.
Now, earlier on, we had difficulty in actually getting the material, supplies, weapons to the Kurds. Are we now sufficiently equipping them for this fight against ISIS?
No, it's interesting. I just talked to a guy today, a friend of ours, I won't say his name, but has been involved in this, and he said, while there is a trickle of supplies going into Erbil and going directly to the Kurds, much of what is destined for the Kurds is going through Baghdad. When it goes through Baghdad, it winds up in the hands of Shiite militias and anything but the Kurds. So, no, we haven't solved that problem yet. And by the way, based on some really good work by our friend, Congressman Frank Wolf, they now actually have the authority to give weapons and supplies to the Christians there, based on a discussion that I had today with someone. So, but it's not happening yet, but we at least do have the authority to do so.
Well, and there more could be done under the existing law and provisions from Congress to provide material to the Kurds. But as you said, very little of it's going directly to them. It's going through Baghdad, and then just a little bit filters through to them. Is the administration kind of speaking out of both sides of its mouth, saying, yeah, we're going to help the Kurds, we're helping them, but in fact, they're taking a circuitous way, a roundabout way there, and it's not actually having the effect that it should?
Yeah, they are speaking out both sides of their mouth. And again, what everybody needs to understand is the Kurds have been longstanding allies. In fact, during the first Gulf War, the Kurds were very supportive of us. And then when we went into Iraq in 2003, the Kurds, along with the 5th Special Forces Group, took on 5 Iraqi divisions and fixed them in the north so that they would not be a danger down in the Baghdad area there. The Kurds have fought along beside us, fought with us, and they've been our allies for a long time. There are some radical Kurdish entities, and they are primarily those that are located in South Turkey that have, in fact, conducted terrorist activities. So the Kurds are not pure. They do have some radical factions within their own ethnic group there, but the Kurds are our friends, and we need to be doing a lot more to support the Kurds.
So let me one final question for you there, General, as we look at this from a geopolitical standpoint. I mean, obviously the Middle East, Syria, Iraq, all of that's still very volatile. How big of an issue is this playing in the presidential election from your standpoint? How much attention is being given to this, and should it be more?
My personal view is this is a broader issue than just what's happening in the Middle East. It is about an expanding existential threat. It's not just ISIS. It's the existential threat of a global jihad. And I think that it really, in my view, it has to be the number one issue. I don't think it's reached that level yet, but I think that it has to be the number one issue because it truly does threaten our future.
Given the let's talk just for a moment about the two candidates. You've got Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, who actually oversaw a lot of these negotiations and the implosion of our leadership. Obviously, Barack Obama at the helm, but she certainly played a role in that. Donald Trump. Is there a stark contrast between the two?
Well, I believe there is, and I think what you have is you have a one candidate that has a record, and that's Hillary. And if you look at, for example, the fact that she turned her back on one of our allies in the Middle East, Hosni Mubarak, and what he was replaced with was the Muslim Brotherhood. She then went after not an ally, but certainly a guy that had changed his attitude and was no longer threatening us, that being Muammar Gaddafi, and what he was replaced with was elements of the Muslim Brotherhood. Not only that, but she armed and equipped the very people that came back and attacked us in Benghazi. So her track record is abysmal on this, and I don't know what she's thinking. I don't know who influences her, but I got to tell you, as far as I'm concerned, Trump doesn't have to know a whole lot about that. He just needs to be convinced that we don't want to support any more of these kinds of groups that have ultimately been turned on us and attacked us.
Mm. All right, General Jerry Boykin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, there you have it. I do think that these issues need to factor in more into the presidential debate, the discussion, the campaign. We're not hearing a lot about it, and these issues of national security are so volatile, and the world has become, well, absent America's leadership, it's just become a free-for-all. And the next president is going to, hopefully, if we have someone who can provide leadership, can work this thing out. If not, who knows what's going to happen. All right, don't go away, folks. On the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a ministry in India that's helping out orphans. We're going to talk about that when we return. Don't go away.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stopped along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800 FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Since September 11, 2001, the U.S. has lost 7,000 lives and $2 trillion in the battle against global jihad. What is needed is a strategy that will allow us to win. What are the best strategies to defeat this threat? And is there an end to this war in sight? I'm Jerry Boykin, the former commander of the Delta Force and executive vice president of the Family Research Council here in Washington. Join me along with Philip Haney, Dr. Sebastian Gorka, and Dr. Zudi Jasser as we discuss these very issues. That's at the Values Voters Summit, September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Please visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to register, or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
With a ministry opportunity, here's Steve Tiber.
8 Days of Hope 12 will be going to Black River, South Carolina. Last year in October, 25 inches of rain fell in the state, causing $22 billion of damage. And now you and I get a chance to go to South Carolina this fall and encourage people who feel like they've been forgotten. We have 70 homes out of the 250 homes that we're looking to work in that need brand new roofs. If you've ever done any roofing whatsoever, a couple roofs in your life, or maybe you've led a roofing crew or worked in construction, consider coming to 8 Days of Hope. We're looking for plumbers, carpenters, painters. Man, there's something for everybody. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com. We hope to see you there.
Be the hands and feet of Jesus. Visit 8daysofhope.com. Please pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this flood. And if you can't volunteer but would still like to help, donations are also needed. You can give and learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon, right? It's Tuesday. I tell you, all the days run together. Still involved in the relief efforts here in Louisiana, still broadcasting this week from Louisiana. A little bit later, I'm going to be talking to another pastor friend of mine, Pastor Mark Sturmer of the Church International, a Marine veteran as well, a good friend of mine, been involved in a number of relief efforts over the years, but he's at the center of it again in Ascension Parish. We're going to talk with him. They, too, are partnering with Samaritan's Purse, three locations they have going on here in Louisiana to deal with his historic flood. So we're going to talk with him. Also, still to come, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio joins us. He is calling for an independent prosecutor to look into, a special prosecutor to be appointed to look into the pay-to-play scheme that emails obtained by Judicial Watch suggest Hillary Clinton engaged in as Secretary of State. We're going to be talking about that still to come here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. Also, if you would like to get regular updates on what's happening in terms of the relief here in Louisiana, and what our church, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, is doing, you can follow the links over to greenwillsprings.com, greenwillsprings.com. Okay, you know, from time to time, we promote other, give you an idea of some other opportunities to engage in ministry and help both here domestically and internationally. Now, it's been, again, I go back to our earlier conversation about Syria and what's been happening in Syria, in the Middle East, and literally around the world. I mean, we can go to Russia, we can go to China, India as well, becoming actually a little more hostile or indifferent to Christianity and to American missionaries going there. It's becoming a very difficult place to operate. Well, there is an organization I want to talk to you about. In fact, I'm going to bring on David Harms with India Partners. They're involved in a boys orphanage in India, and they're today partnering with American Family Radio, which is one of our partners here from Washington Watch, helping them raise $148,000 for this orphanage to expand it, do a little more work there in India. So joining me now is a representative from India Partners, and that is David Harm. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Anytime we get a chance to talk about what God is doing around the world, we're happy to jump in and talk all you want.
Well, David, let's talk a little bit about the environment has changed a little bit in India post their elections, and it's becoming a little more difficult to operate there in India, is it not?
It is in many ways, but the good news and that our structure at India Partners from its beginning has been to partner with local indigenous ministries. So what that means in a really good way, and especially as it relates to this whole thing, is that we're simply coming alongside people that are Indian. So as they are doing their ministry, we can support them in that. And we provide a lot of training and counsel and some boots on the ground in terms of volunteers. But in terms of the core of the ministry, it's run by Indian people. And that would be Pastor Eleazar and his wife Prema, Indian citizens that share the gospel, love those in the name of Jesus. And it is a very interesting society spiritually. I mean, it's predominantly Hindu, which means they have multiple gods that they will pray to, and the tendency might be to add Jesus into the mix, so to speak.
It's actually harder. In many ways, it's kind of harder to evangelize those who are polytheistic, who just see a multitude of gods. Oh, okay, your god's fine too.
Yeah, we'll pray to your god because— Right. You pray, we pray, we want to honor you, so therefore we'll just add Jesus to the mix. Very common. Yeah.
Now, also, you have, there's a Muslim population in India as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's predominantly Hindu, but there is a growing Muslim population. The Christian community is relatively small. Overall, across the country, it's relatively small. And the hard part about that is that it is not against the law to be Christian. They do have issues if you convert. And so that's where we're always very careful with the nature of the society, but we clearly present that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus is central to this, that people were drawn to this. And certainly in the context of that with this children's home, we're thrilled with this because this means if we can get this this facility built, what it means is that the boys that are currently in a home shared by both boys and girls, the government has said, nope, they need to be in separate facilities. So we're trying to build this facility for boys. Mm-hmm. What we know is that we have a deadline barreling at us on September 15th, that if we don't break ground and start building this boys' home, the government could come in and take the boys and put them into a totally different environment, either a government home or a home run by Hindus, or we just don't know where they could possibly go. So as long as we can break ground on the 15th, then we're fine. The boys are secure. The government would know that progress is being made. Now, we've had a chance. We've purchased the land. We've got it all ready to go. The site prep is there. The permits are all secured. Everything's set to go. What's missing, though, is the funding for the actual building itself. So that's why we've been talking today on the AFR network about funding the building of this boys' home and orphanage, and why we're asking people to call and be as generous as they possibly can toward the $148,000 price tag for putting this building up.
David, give folks a way that they can connect and find more information about India Partners.
The website is afr.net, and big banner when you go there, afr.net, and we do have a toll-free number where people can call right now, 800-256-1677. 800-256-1677, hoping that we can get this thing funded and get some shovels in the ground and some foundations laid by the 15th of September.
All right. Well, David, we'll certainly encourage folks to check that out at afr.org or afr.net and find out more about how they can partner with you in this effort to reach more people with the love and the truth of Jesus Christ. David, thanks so much for being with us.
A pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. You know, folks, one of the reasons I think America has been blessed is because we have been a giving nation, and we have advanced the gospel, and we have cared for others, And this is one of those opportunities to do that. We should, even in our own need, we should not fail to attempt and try to meet the needs of others. All right, folks, we're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of this break. Pastor Mark Sturmer joins me. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Dollar slightly higher today on the yen and the euro. Obviously, that's going to hurt gold, maybe some other commodities as we look at the direction of the dollar in reference to the devaluating of the yen and the euro. In the midst of all this, it looks like global growth is going to depend upon China's successful makeover of their economy. Here's the problem with this. Everybody hanging on China, even the IMF hanging on China's numbers. You've got to believe the numbers that China is putting out. Now, China said they're looking for domestic growth somewhere around 6.7% in the year 2016. Now, the International Monetary Fund predicted 6.6% growth. The problem is, how do we believe what the number is? If they predicted 6.7%, you can almost guarantee that they will say they achieved their goal of 6.7%. If they do that, China would account for 1.2 percentage points of the world's GDP growth. The IMF currently expecting 3.1% global growth. China at that point would contribute 39% of the total GDP growth of the world. Think about that. It is amazing. If you wonder why myself and so many others watch China so closely, that would be the reason.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, @TPerkins. Still to come, Congressman Jim Jordan is going to be joining me in the last segment to talk about his call for a special prosecutor to look into Hillary Clinton's pay-to-play scheme that recently discovered emails suggest may have been happening. We're going to talk with him about that. But first, the relief effort here in Louisiana in the wake of the historic flooding is still ramping up. I mean, it's not like it's dying down. I mean, it's still ramping up as volunteers are coming from around the nation to help families mud out their homes and begin the process of rebuilding. 20 of Louisiana's 64 parishes were declared federal disaster areas where more than 100,000 homes were destroyed or significantly impacted by flooding. Now, a major part of the relief response has been faith-based churches helping their communities, which they've been able to do because churches from around the nation have been helping the churches here in Louisiana. It's been amazing to watch. I mean, every time I would turn around at the church, there would be another truck of stuff coming from people, churches across the nation. And then it would be we'd be giving out to the community. Well, a close pastor friend of mine, a Marine veteran as well, who I've worked with in a number of relief efforts, is once again at the center of relief efforts in his community in Ascension Parish that was also hit hard by the flooding. So joining me now is the senior pastor of the Church International, which has several campuses in the area surrounding Baton Rouge, Pastor Mark Sturmer. Mark, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you.
Well, give our listeners a sense of probably the same as it is in the Baton Rouge area, but what things look like there in Ascension in the wake of this historic flooding?
Well, as you know, Tony, and your house flooded as well as mine flooded as well, is that it was devastation. And, you know, we went from the rescue, which is, you know, the Cajun Navy, rescuing people, getting people out, housing people in houses so they wouldn't have to go to the big shelters, which was totally amazing watching. That was really the true story in all of this, was the people helping the people.
Right.
I know at our church, we had more homes open then we had people needing to go in homes. And it was that kind of response of people helping people, and that truly shows the love of God. And then, you know, secondly, it's beginning the relief, and we started all the relief and bringing all the goods and getting people the goods they needed as far as cleaning out, goods to eat, hot food, canned goods, diapers, and such as that. And that's still going on in some areas. But now we're moving into the recovery phase where it's long term. It's getting out the house. It's, you know, figuring out what are you going to do in the meantime. Like myself, you know, I'm 7 months off probably getting back into my home. And, you know, it's a lot of disruption, and the government's helping, and, you know, with our parish government, our state government, with the federal government, the churches are helping, but the key is everyone is working together. We can't look to any one entity to pull everyone out. We all have to work together.
Yeah, and it's what's interesting, especially in the initial phases of these disasters, the church plays such a key role because that's where people turn to immediately for help. And I don't know, I guess maybe it's because we've been through so many of these natural disasters here in Louisiana. I know other states have had them as well, but it seems like we've had our share. And the churches are almost, you know, they're prepared and people are conditioned to respond to the churches as a result.
Yes, the church volunteering and serving and doing what needs to be done has been absolutely amazing. Just to watch. It's kind of a funny story. One of our church members, we were in the room and we're making some decisions of what we needed to do the next day and the week to follow. And one of them said, "Look, Pastor, next year when we do this," I said, "Hold up, this is not a yearly schedule, hopefully. But we've done so many disasters just over the years, it almost seems like it's just become a part of the fabric of who the church has become." And even in the Bible, when they talk about, you know, the great famine that came across the land in the book of Acts, it said the church got together and they pooled all their resources and they sent it to where the needy Christians were to help them out through that disaster. Yeah. And I believe that's exactly where we're at with the early church. Is what we're doing with the latter church today is when there's a need, when there's catastrophe, we have to rally together the troops and we have to help.
Yeah. Without question. Pastor Mark Sturmer, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, let us know how we can help you over there in Ascension Parish. All right, Pastor Mark Sturmer, the Church International, and, you know, I was talking with last night one of the Samaritan's Purse guys who's a kind of a veteran of these types of events, and he said, you know what, I was amazed. He said, I've been to a lot of places. He said, what was amazing is we came here, how much work had already been done. And they were here 48 hours after the flood. He said, you know, it was amazing just to see how people were helping one another, families helping each other. He said, most of the places we go, people are simply waiting. I think we're, you know, we're conditioned and to respond, to help neighbor helping neighbor, and churches helping the community. As Mark pointed out, there's a role for the government to play. But it's not as expansive as some would like. I do think there are lessons to be learned in these, and as the frequency of these storms, our churches have to be prepared to, at least in the initial phases, help people who are hurting and need a place to turn. And that's been happening here. And it's continuing, and it will for some months to come. All right, folks, on the other side of the break, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio joins us. He's chairman of the Freedom Caucus, and he's calling for a special prosecutor to look into allegations that Hillary Clinton was engaging in pay-to-play. We'll talk about it when we return.
The family is the heart of our economy. It is the greatest generator of knowledge, attitudes, skills, and habits of the individual, and is a generator of financial savings and capital. The vast majority of small businesses begin as family businesses, which eventually become the large businesses of the nation. Families are thus the great generators of business, and they are affected profoundly by the tax code. What Washington does to the family budget has a direct effect on the well-being of millions of moms, dads, and children. Given the importance of family economic well-being and the sluggishness of economic growth, Family Research Council proposes 5 short-term but productive actions that federal policymakers can take to help moms and dads better provide for their children through tax reform. To learn more about our family-friendly tax proposals, visit frc.org/taxes.
The more Trivia Friday you get,
what?
The merrier. Coming this Labor Day.
So, you want a cheeseburger without cheese?
Well,
tune in for a Trivia Friday marathon on American Family Radio.
Hold the cheese.
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
What?
Well, I give in to uncontrollable laughter for hours with the Trivia Friday marathon. Labor Day morning starting at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Department of Homeland Security official Phil Haney saw leaders of Muslim Brotherhood front groups brought into the highest chambers of power and given access to sensitive information, allowing them to shape the nation's security policy. When he saw something and said something, some of his bosses, including those in the White House, didn't respond with gratitude, but instead ordered the information to be sanitized or eliminated, launching investigations against him instead of against those documented threats to our nation's security. Phil joined us recently at the American Decency Association, sharing how he stood for the truth and what we can do in these perilous times. Get informed and inform others. Visit our store at americandecency.org to order Phil's new book, See Something, Say Nothing. Order the CD of this informative event or watch our short interview with this Christian warrior. Go to americandecency.org. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com, if you want to keep up with what's transpiring here in Louisiana, and especially in our community that we've been so heavily involved in terms of the give you some idea of the scope of this. We have parishes down here versus counties. Our parish, which our church is really on the border of two parishes, East Baton Rouge Parish and Livingston Parish. I used to represent both those areas when I was in office. In East Baton Rouge Parish, 60% of the parish was underwater. In Livingston Parish, 80%. I mean, it was two of the parishes hit hardest by the flooding. In our church, about half the families displaced from their homes being flooded. So the very significant flood of historic proportions. As I said earlier, I should have known when the animals were walking down our driveway two by two that something bad was about to happen. But anyway, if you want to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and there's a link to our church website, GreenwellSprings.com. We're doing daily updates just to let you know what's happening. And many of you have contributed. In fact, we had supporters, longtime supporters of the Family Research Council, who are just great folks. They are involved in some restaurants in Georgia, and they actually sent a crew over to cook for all the Samaritan Purse volunteers and the other volunteers working at the church last night. Drove all the way over just to cook us some great barbecue, and very much appreciated. I know other churches have sent stuff, and others have sent it. Just thank you for allowing us to minister in the community with your support. In fact, we've had over a dozen people in the parking lot of our church receiving assistance who have made professions of faith as a result of the ministry that we've been able to engage in because of support coming from folks like you. So thank you so much. All right, let's move on now. I want to talk about this evolving scandal involving Hillary Clinton. New emails bringing information to light The question is, did Hillary Clinton engage in a pay-to-play scheme when she was Secretary of State to fill the coffers of the Clinton Foundation? Well, newly released emails suggest that that may very well have been the case. And in light of the new evidence uncovered in these emails, which were obtained by Judicial Watch, members of Congress are calling for a special prosecutor to be appointed. The question is, will it happen? Well, joining me now with the latest on this is the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Ohio, and he, too, is calling for action in this case, Congressman Jim Jordan. Welcome back to Washington Watch, Jim.
Good to be with you, Tony, and we've been thinking and praying for you guys. Hope you and your family and your home are on the mend.
Well, we will be. The family's great. Okay. We're all dry
good.
Now, and I appreciated the text you sent last week or week before when this was unfolding.
But yep.
Yeah, we're resilient. We're wash and wear, so we're going to be good. but you know, it's going to be a process. Let's talk now about these emails.
Sure.
It just seems like more and more information just coming to light that just now does not bode well for Hillary Clinton.
No, it sure doesn't. And you mentioned in your opening statement there that, you know, is this pay to play? It sure looks that way, doesn't it? I mean, anyone with common sense and any basic logic would conclude that when you have the email that from Ms. Aberdeen that talked about getting someone this position and the access that was sold and or the access I should say that was given, it sure looks like pay to play. And remember, they set this whole arrangement up, this private special server, to hide all this information right from the get-go. And when they got caught, that's when they had to go and destroy some of the documents and scrub their devices, as Mr. Comey testified to.
I mean, it's like a Chinese water torture with emails. I mean, we're constantly seeing this stuff dribble out of more and more and more and more information that suggests that this was not accidental. It was not just, it just didn't happen, but it was intentional to avoid this type of information coming to light.
You know what, and Tony, last October I had a chance to ask Secretary Clinton under oath in front of the Benghazi, in the Benghazi hearing. And I asked her a question. I said, if you want to be so transparent as you said, why don't you agree to allow a neutral third party like a retired federal judge come in and look at the emails and he can decide which ones should be made available to the Congress and the public and the State Department, and which ones are purely personal and you can keep. Why don't you agree to allow a neutral third-party retired federal judge come in and do that, and she wouldn't agree to that, which shows you they were wanting to hide this right from the get-go and didn't want this information to ever become public.
So, Congressman Jordan, you have joined with others calling for a special prosecutor. Why a special prosecutor?
Well, when you have this kind of arrangement in the Justice Department that's been so biased by this, where Loretta Lynch met on the tarmac with former President Clinton, where Lynch does something she's never done before when she says, I'll follow the recommendations of the FBI, even though she doesn't know what those recommendations are, even though she's the final say, and even though she's the Attorney General. When you have a Justice Department that is so much more focused on politics than they are on justice, this is the exact situation you need a special prosecutor. So when Donald Trump called for a special prosecutor, and we seconded that, and others did too, this is the kind of situation that cries out for a special prosecutor, which, of course, the Justice Department, I'm confident, won't do because, again, they're political. But we still called for it because it's the right thing to do, and it's the right situation for such a thing.
This administration, and let me just bring that down and zero in on the Department of Justice, which, in your capacity on the House Government Oversight Committee, you have been involved in, it's usually a committee that really doesn't have a lot to do, but in the last 8 years,
yeah.
I mean, you guys have been, you guys have been at the center of the stage politically because you've had the guns issue.
Fast
with
and Furious, the IRS, you name it. Yeah.
I mean, it's just one scandal after another, and you're absolutely right. The Department of Justice has refused to prosecute in every case. And in fact, it was the Fast and Furious where you held the former Attorney General in contempt of Congress because he refused to provide the information that you all had requested. So you're not expecting them to appoint a special prosecutor.
No. No, we do not expect it. I mean, look, Lois Lerner is getting a full pension and got to retire with, you know, a full benefit. Eric Holder was held in contempt and no big deal. He left and everything moved on. John Koskinen continues to serve as the IRS commissioner, even though documents were destroyed while he was commissioner that were under subpoena. You know, this is now the new Justice Department, and so many Americans now view that there are two standards. See that there are two standards. There's one for you and me and we the people, Tony, and then there's a completely different standard for the politically connected, like Lois Lerner, John Koskinen, and Hillary Clinton. And that is not how it's supposed to work in this great nation. We're all supposed to be treated equally under the law. So, yeah, I don't expect the Justice Department to do the right thing because they haven't been doing the right thing. They're political now. And again, that is so troublesome when you think about this great country and how we're supposed to operate.
Okay, Congressman Jim Jordan, I need then to ask you a political question.
Sure.
Because it's one that I'm asked very often. I'm sure you've probably been asked. I've scratched my head because I really don't have an answer because I can't wrap my head around it. But when you consider let's just take what we're talking here about Hillary Clinton and these emails. And as I said, this is not the first batch of emails that suggested that she's done something illegal or corrupt. How in the world can she be a contender for the presidency of the United States and actually be in some polls from as they go back and forth, be leading? I mean, how can Americans put their confidence in someone like Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think part of it is, we talk about this, Tom, and it usually doesn't do us much good, but the mainstream press is so biased. I mean, think about the last 4 weeks. You had the Iran ransom deal. You had the Iranian scientist who was executed, and his name appeared on some of the Clinton email traffic. You had the DNC staffer shot in the back of the head. You had the Hillary Clinton gives a speech in Orlando, and standing behind her is the father of the terrorists in the Orlando massacre. And you have the Huma Abedin. You have all these things. And what does the press want to talk about? They want to talk about Ryan Lochte and something Donald Trump said 2 days ago. So part of it is driven by the press treatment, I think. But look, we still got plenty of time for this election. And I think Donald Trump is calling for a special prosecutor is the right thing. He made a great pick in Mike Pence, the guy that you and I both know who's a good man. I think Donald Trump is doing things that make a lot of sense. Yeah. And I think he can still win this thing, and I'm doing everything I can to help him.
No, I agree that I think that's true. But it shouldn't even be close, in my view.
Yeah.
I mean, considering – now, I know that Donald Trump was not most conservatives' first pick. I get that. I understand. However, I just cannot see for the – I would say even the average American who has some idea of what's going on, how they could even consider supporting Hillary Clinton, given all of this this information that has come to light about her.
Yeah, Libya alone, Tony, should disqualify
Secretary
Clinton from ever being commander-in-chief.
The fact that she
has told a false narrative to Tyrone Woods' dad and Sean Smith's mom, that alone should disqualify, and communicated this whole false video narrative to the American people.
To the American people.
That alone should disqualify. Yeah, that should disqualify.
I agree. And I don't know how anyone could serve under such an administration in a dangerous place, because you would have no confidence whatsoever that your government had your back, because the track record that she has had suggests otherwise.
No military assets even took off before the attack was over. What did start before the attack ended was the political spin, and it started because they were 56 days before an election. They were more concerned about their political future and their legacy than they were, in my judgment, about getting help to Tyrone Woods, Glenn Doherty, and the rest of those Americans who were fighting for their lives. And when she got back, she continued the false video narrative to Tyrone Woods' dad and Sean Smith's mom. And again, that right there should disqualify her from being the president.
Yeah, I could not agree more. Listening to Washington Watch, I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, my guest. Jim, One final question for you, because you mentioned the media, and I'm going to talk about that in just a moment, because I think you're absolutely right. I would just suggest to people today that just ignore the media, the mainstream media, because they are so biased. I have seen such a – in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine today who used to be a he's retired, but used to be a newscaster at a local news station here, actually in Baton Rouge. And he said they have a – he said they always had an agenda, but they used to be try to be fair and balanced, or at least fair.
Yeah.
Not anymore. You have seen the liberal media pushing this progressive agenda at every level. And so my question is, you mentioned that, and I think it's absolutely true. The only way that Congress, and I'm talking about the House of Representatives and the Senate that's under control of the Republicans, to get information out is through hearings. Now, people say, well, you have all these hearings, but nothing ever happens. But part of the reason, one of the main reasons for the hearing is simply to bring light to this information so that alternative news services can get that information out there. Is there going to be further hearings held on this new batch of emails?
I believe so. I mean, obviously, that's the call of the chairman of the committee. But I believe so. There's sort of a format you go through. You get information first through letters and correspondence back and forth with the respective agency. But yeah, we need to have that happen.
Well, I think it's been invaluable, these hearings that have been held. I know that it hasn't resulted in a lot of action because, as you said, the administration is not going to do anything. But it has informed the American public of what's taking place. And I commend you for the leadership role you've been playing to bring so many of these scandals to light and not giving up, even though it looks like sometimes you're beating your head against the wall.
Well, thank you. We got to do more, though. We have to do more to bring the light of day on some of these crazy things that are going on so the American people know.
Yeah. All right, Congressman Jim Jordan, I know you guys are back next week. We'll be there as well. In fact, I think you're going to be at the Values Voter Summit, are you not?
I think I saw that on my schedule. Looking forward to it, Tony.
All right. We'll see you next week at the Values Voter Summit. All right, man. Thanks so much for being with us. Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus as well. And that's right. He's going to be at the Values Voter Summit. And you could be there as well. You just have to check it out at the website, TonyPerkins.com. And if you're not already registered, we can probably squeeze you in, but you need to register soon. So go to TonyPerkins.com. Hey, we just got a few minutes left, but let me harp on this for a moment because I think it's absolutely true. Folks, don't believe what you hear in the media. In fact, don't even take it what I say at face value. Check it out. You know, that's one of the things that Paul said he liked the Bereans because they actually dug in and verified what was being said. Don't be spoon-fed, okay? Don't just take everything at face value, especially what you hear and or read on the internet. I shake my head sometimes when people send me stuff saying, hey, did you see this? I said, folks, check it out before you blast something out. Verify it, okay? And consider your sources. I would not take the mainstream media, I wouldn't take what they give at all because they have an agenda, okay? Verify your sources, and then check it out, okay? Verify it. Make sure it's true. I will tell you everything I tell you here is true, but go ahead and verify it. I encourage you to do so. All right. Hey, great to have you with us. Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow, and I hope you will as well. Until then, yes, until then, I leave you with the words once again of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and we've taken your stand. Unless the water's rising and you need to swim, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.